This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Joyce Goh, and this is The Morning Run. With me today are Julian Ng and Sharit Sabdullah. It's Thursday, January 31st, a day before a public holiday for federal territories. Can you guys smell the long weekend?
Oh, yeah. It's coming.
It's going to be good.
Well, here we are at the end of January. Where did January go, actually, guys?
January is the Monday of the year, right?
Yeah, Monday
someone,
of the year.
Someone said.
Has run away with December.
Well, yeah, and it looks like we're at the end of January, and before we know it, it's going to be Chinese New Year. So what are your plans for the upcoming long weekend or also Chinese New Year? Any plans going back to the hometown or taking a long break?
Oh, you know, Chinese New Year stuff, like? Eating and eating and eating.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm going to be spending time with food and eat and with some family as well.
And enjoy the empty roads of Kuala Lumpur during this festive season.
You know what I want to do is visit the River Life. I've been wanting to do that.
River of Life.
River of Life, yeah. River of Life at Dattar Amrika. So apparently.
Yeah, yeah. Across Masjid Jamik as well.
Yeah.
Should you go at night though with the lights? Or you still planning to go at night?
Yeah. So
okay,
it's
tell
a good
us
time,
how
I guess.
There's
not going to be a lot of crowd, I hope. So.
Yeah, I think it's going to be quite empty. But then again, it's also the holiday season. Some people, our town people might, you know, visit the Klang Valley.
Yep.
But yeah, so what are we going to be talking about today, guys?
Right. So love thy neighbor, the phrase, as it goes. So here's one reason to make it hard to love them. So a survey by Human Resource Consultant have come up with a ranking of the most livable cities in Asia. So we'll share where Malaysia ranks alongside its neighbors.
Okay, and also Luxembourg is giving out a free public transportation to everybody, and I'm going to upworthy this by saying it's not the reason that you think.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, we're also going to be talking about France. They're banning all kids under 15 from using their phones in school. Is that the way forward when it comes to tech? Because, you know, we live in the digital world.
True.
Yeah, but coming up next, we have Yamo B there by R&B giant James Ingram, who sadly just passed away yesterday from brain cancer. This is BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Joyce, Julian and Sharit's here with you on The Morning Run, and that was Rockin' Robin by Jackson 5. Now, turning to France, what kids there will not be rocking with in their school is their handphones. School kids in France under 15 cannot use their handphones at any point during the school day, thanks to a new nationwide law. I think that happened a couple of months ago. But, you know, is this the way forward? And to me, right, I think definitely, how can they be bringing their phones to school? But I know of some schools here who actually allow their school kids to bring
actually,
their phones
to school. Is that even allowed? I mean, whose bright idea was it to allow children to bring mobile phones into school, right? Because, you know, when I went to school, they have a lot of rules, like your hair got to be of a certain style. Mm-hmm. Like if it's even mildly trendy, you get disciplined. And today, it's crazy. Like you're allowed school phones in the classroom.
It sounds like you're cornering us, Julian. Of course, it's parents.
You think it's parents, or do you think sometimes it's peer pressure from the kids and from their,
that's interesting.
You know,
well, yeah.
That's interesting.
Right?
I mean, why would you allow,
why would
you as a parent allow
exactly,
mobile
right?
phones?
Yeah, and at what age is a good age to allow their mobile phones? Because I don't think, for me, because I have some friends who tell me that some of their kids or their kids' schoolmates at 7, 8 years old already have mobile phones. To me, I think that's still young.
Yeah.
So, but some parents allow it. I'm not so sure whether kids bringing mobile phones is due to parents or could it be kids themselves.
I know of more than one parent, you know, different parents who have a no screen policy for the kids.
Like, yeah.
Not even for you know, timeout or whatever, right? And research has shown that is the right thing to do because looking at screens are bad for toddlers. It really slows down their mental development.
Yeah. Mm. So, as you mentioned, how old, even those who created all this technology for us, even they don't allow their children. I mean, based on a report saying that even Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, they don't expose their kids to gadgets really early.
There you go.
And
they're the one creating it. So.
They're the tech giants.
And in fact, not just them, apparently all the wealthy tech executive. They know what damage this all this tech could do to children, and they're the ones actually controlling their children and, you know, trying to resist having their children exposed to these gadgets really early.
I mean, let alone disrupting the lesson, right? The thing about us today, and perhaps, you know, I fear for our children, you know, when they grow up, would they know how to talk to each other?
True.
Because, well, their, you know, stringing of sentences consists of all the abbreviations that they're using on WhatsApp or whatever social media that comes up in the future, right?
We
see the death of language as we know it.
I know. So instead of laughing, they go LOL.
Exactly. You
know?
That's true. I mean, as a parent myself, I mean, I try to resist. And right now, I think at home, they don't touch my phone. They don't touch my wife's phone because we know that when they spend time with their grandparents, I mean, they let loose.
So, do they have their own phones though?
No. I mean, that's what I think. That's one thing that's quite clear for me. And I, you know, it's going to be hard to resist once they probably reach primary school, like this article is saying, it's up to 15 years old, like early primary and also early secondary. But time will tell. It'll be difficult.
Yeah, kids under 15 cannot use their cell phones. Because then you wonder how young are the kids there who bring their cell phones to school. And they use it during, I guess, for during break time, lunch time. But then I also wonder whether or not they bring their phones with them. I mean, they use their phones for classes, whether, you know, for, I don't know, searching for information and all that.
Yeah.
There are schools today who encourage their kids to bring laptops to school over a certain age. So, yeah.
I think laptops are fine because it aids the educational process. And, you know, I'm not a Luddite because I think mobile phones are an item of modernity. You need it to communicate and to survive and to get around. But it does interrupt the classroom. It does interrupt the education that you're getting. And in fact, the other place I think they should ban mobile phones are at the movies. Do you notice how many people can't get off their phones even while watching a movie?
I agree. And sometimes it's not the sound, it's the screen glare.
Exactly.
Right? It's not because
have these
of the
blocking mechanisms.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Because it's the glare that distracts you from the actual movie.
Yeah, but if I could just add, one thing that strikes me really well with this in this article is the term "a law for the 21st century." I don't know. Because I think a lot of us are still clueless as to how to manage the impact of technology. Clearly, the benefit of technology outweighs the bad thing that comes with it. But it's the magnitude of the bad things that comes from the tech is what's concerning, you know, depression and suicide. I mean, like you said, lack of interaction. I mean, there's a lot of...
Lack of social skills.
There are also
a
lot of Big Brother elements in it. And I mean, recently in Malaysia, we talked about how to impose curfews on teenagers. Is this another kind of Big Brother element creeping into our lives when you ban something as simple as mobile phones, right? But we haven't seen the full extent of how technology can either help or destroy our lives.
That's right. Well, we're going for a break. After that, we're going to come back and talk about free public transportation. Is that a dream or is that real? Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Joyce, Julian and Sharad's here with you on The Morning Run. And that was Such Great Heights by Postal Service. Now, guys, now let's look to Luxembourg because from March 1st, 2020, there will be no charge from using trains, trams and buses in the city. And the move, I think that's going to benefit a lot of people. They have about 602,000 residents and 175,000 cross-border workers, as well as 1.2 million annual tourists. So how much is that all going to cost? I mean, is it a tall order to, you know, give free public transportation to all?
Well, I don't think so. I think Luxembourg is an extremely rich country. But the reason why they did this is very interesting because the usual reason why people ban cars and so on is because of environmental reasons. But they did this for equality reasons. They wanted to close the equality gap. And Luxembourg, if you look at the map, is a landlocked area.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of cross-border commuters, like 45% of their workers are from outside of Luxembourg compared to the rest of EU, which is just 1%, right?
So
that's massive. Like half of your workers are from elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know? So they just made transportation free, just to make life easier for people. And I think that's very commendable. And I totally think they can afford it because they're so rich.
Yeah, but that's the odd thing, isn't it? I mean, when we talk about affording free transport, the country can afford free transport, but also can the people afford to pay for transportation as well? I mean, a lot of the times this issue about trying to give free transportation to elevate, for an the cost of living, for an example. I always thought that this should apply more for developing countries, for an example. But
a lot of these cross-border workers are from so-called developing EU nations, though. I mean, you can argue that they're giving away free money because they paid for transportation, but they're giving away to so-called foreigners. And that might be a misnomer because in EU, it's borderless, right?
Yeah.
But they're giving it to these people who are actually helping to build Luxembourg's economy.
And I think looking at the figures here, how much they're collecting from their current operating costs, it's only 10%. So I guess, what's 10%? What's subsidized? What's an additional 10% to just perhaps facilitate that movement, especially if we want to talk about equality? I guess that's the way to go. There are people who probably from the other countries that may not be as rich as Luxembourg, but there are some questions people are asking about whether or not money should be spent here and whether or not it should be prioritized elsewhere. For example, education.
Yeah, well, a commuter that was interviewed for this BBC article says that, if he uses the public transportation every day, he'll save around 2,000 euros annually. That's a lot.
That's a huge amount of money because if you look at the poverty line now, we have the B40, they have the B10, right? The bottom 10% of the people who are earning just an average of 1,000 euros per month. So the savings of 2,000 euros is a huge savings for anybody. Not just for their version of the B10. And interestingly, a few days ago, we were talking about the Malaysian poverty rate. You remember that? Five or seven ringgit per day. But if you adjust that to a relative basis, relative to other poor cities, then that poverty rate becomes 20%.
That's right.
To 50 ringgit.
The poverty line becomes 50 ringgit, which is 1,500 ringgit a month, right? But in EU or in Luxembourg, this poverty line is about $1,200 per month. Mm-hmm. So which makes it about 5,000 ringgit. Of course, the
cost
locations
there,
are different.
Yeah.
Like the cost of living would be definitely different.
The cost of living and also what they get in a basket, I guess. Yeah, and it comes to
totally efforts. Different.
Yeah.
But what's exciting about this is that Luxembourg is going to be the first country to do this if they go ahead with this and if they successfully implement this. And one thing good about being the first, then
Will others follow? Is it?
Well, yeah. There's a chance that they could become a case.
You know,
study.
A lot of cities are joining the car-free movement, right? Singapore is not going to allow any new cars on their roads by 2020 or something. Madrid is already car-free, and that's for environmental reasons. Singapore is for congestion, but it really helps with the environment.
Well, speaking of Singapore, they topped the ranking for the most livable city for Asian expats again. We'll come back to talk about that. But before this, we have a song, Friday by JJ Kelly. Friday's tomorrow. Well, stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this is The Morning Run. Joyce, Julian and Sharts here with you. Now, that was Closer to Fine by Indigo Girls. So from the song Closer to Fine, let's turn our attention to Fine City. And that's our neighbour, Singapore.
That's a low blow.
Well, could be a fact. But yeah, Singapore is the most livable city for Asian expats for the 14th year in a row, guys.
Yep.
14th year in a row.
Not surprised.
Well, where is Malaysia in all of this? Well, we have Georgetown and Kuala Lumpur. They rose to 97th and 98th spots, respectively. I guess there's an improvement. The article says it rose up some ranks. But yeah, looking at this, but the survey, just bear in mind, these are for Asian expats.
Oh, for Asian expats, not for the matsalis.
I guess matsalis that come to Asia.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
potentially. Yeah. So what do you think of this survey?
I think it's very interesting, and I would like to look into the factors upon which all these cities are voted on. And very interesting that Hong Kong and Singapore are always compared to each other, right? Island, all the islands, right? And both are financial centres, both have a lot of expats trying to attract the best talents in town. Hong Kong no longer, because a lot of their expats have been sucked up by other places like China, other places in China. But Hong Kong fell after the this year's typhoon, which will cost Hong Kong about $1 billion in repair damage, and just because of that, they just slid off the rank. I mean, it's unfair, right? The typhoon making it less livable, but there you go, facts of life.
Yeah. So, well, I like to look at it in how governments, you know, they get into their resolves, you know, when they come up with a decision. For example, I mean, if you try and Google China now and then in 1990s and how it looks like in 2010 and even now it's coming to 2020.
You're doing that decade, a Facebook decade.
The 10 years challenge now is 30-year challenge. I mean, there's a striking difference. It's all, I mean, that's a government resolve. Mm. But one closer example, our neighbour Bangkok, who is now ranked higher than Kuala Lumpur as well, at Georgetown. If you remember, I mean, back in the day, they used to call Bangkok a cowboy town, right? And but I think after that massive flood that they had, I think 2011 or 12, if I'm not mistaken, and you know, of course, flood, one thing it creates is just filth, right? Pollution on the street. And so I think they stopped that. I think one of the main reasons is because plastics were blocking the drain. So government started saying, hey, look, we need to make some really drastic decision. One of the things besides cleaning up the drain was that what causes the plastic to begin with, which is street vendors. And they banned it on the street. Of course, now Bangkok looks really nice and clean, but
I love Bangkok, right? Because there's so much to offer, the food,
shopping,
massage, and it's cheap. But the thing that does it for me in Bangkok now and then, right now, is the metro. Because in the past, when you wanted to get around Bangkok, it was really hard because you had got to be stuck in traffic. But now you just take the metro and you can just get around so easily. And I think that connectivity is what KL needs. I don't know if you guys can put yourself in the shoes of an expat, right, and look into KL and have an honest, objective assessment of KL's livability. Would you actually live here as an expat? I'm just wondering.
I think so.
Yeah, I think KL has got a lot to offer, to be honest.
But I might pick Penang to KL.
I love Penang too. I love Penang. I love Georgetown.
Yeah, actually, so Georgetown is 97th and KL is 98th.
Right.
But KL also, the traffic, again, as you mentioned, I mean, that could be an issue, being stuck in traffic. If we have that connection, then that's good, right?
Yeah, but the thing is, we do. It's just that, you know, I that's one thing that we have to question, is the mentality. Despite sometimes when you drive up to, for example, against the traffic to Puchong, you will see on the other side how the traffic is. But there is connectivity from Puchong to KL. So, I mean, sometimes we're going to start running out of excuses as to why we're being stuck in traffic.
Yeah, yeah. I use a lot of the public transportation, and I think it's just awesome. But still, for people who live in far-flung places like Klang and so on, it's not quite there yet.
That's right. Mm. I mean, there are places where they still have that excuse. But
and also getting to the train station, right? You still need to find that last mile connection.
Yeah.
You still need that. And
you got to get a bicycle or something.
Yeah, you think?
Scooter or, you know, GHP 1000.
Yeah, I try. Well, it's also looking at this is interesting. Because Bangkok is so close to, well, kind of. It's on 89th place compared to Georgetown and Kuala Lumpur, that's in the ranks of the 90s. Would you pick Thailand to Malaysia? Looking at this.
It's got to be city specific. I wouldn't live in any part of Thailand, just as I wouldn't live in Bangkok compared to Penang. It's a tough choice. I think I would pick Penang. I love Penang. But are there jobs in Penang? That's the question.
Mm. I don't know if I can make Bangkok a home, though. But yeah.
Okay, we're going into the break and we'll be right back after that. So stay locked in to The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this is The Morning Run. Joyce, Julian and Sharit's here with you. And that was Australia by The Shins, taking us into the conversation of Asian billionaires grooming their granddaughters to take over the business. Well, there's Michelle Lee. She is a 23-year-old granddaughter of Lee Ka-shing. He is Hong Kong's richest person. And she has joined a family business. And it looks like Her father, Victor Lee, actually took over the reins last year from Lee Ka-shin, who is 90 years old. And it looks like her appointment shows that, you know, that whole family is looking towards succession planning from even many generations, multiple generations from where they are today. So how, what do you guys think about this planning ahead? You know,
I don't really buy into the idea of legacy or succession planning for very rich people. I know that that would be the natural thing that they would do. But, you know, what are they going to do to save the world, right? We're just coming off Davos, and Davos hasn't solved the world's problems. And these billionaires, I mean, they've got more money than they can use. So really, these people should be thinking about charity, about social work, rather than trying to save. And you know, all that talk about meritocracy, I mean, corporate royalty and corporate aristocracy does not equal meritocracy. There are enough people out there to just do the corporate work, you know. And I think it's just a misconception that you really have to further this whole idea of a corporate succession, because this is all about maximizing return to shareholders, right?
Right.
Yeah. And other people can do it.
That's an interesting point, as in, you know, family legacy and so forth. But you know, when you think about passing it over to his granddaughter, for example, who's going to be, who is probably a millennial, and looking at how some millennials are being raised, especially those with very rich parents. I mean, they grow up with having a lot of things, and they reach to that level of probably that level where they want to aspire for bigger things, for an example. And one of it could be philanthropy, giving
which
it out.
Which they're not doing, right? Because they're just passing the corporate legacy to their children.
Well, yeah, they could still do that, do charity, but at the same time also do succession planning. I personally think succession planning is important, be it for a family business or non-family business, if it's a corporation.
Yeah, but this is hardly a family business, because you're talking about corporations the size of small economies here, right? And you're talking about businesses that affect large swaths of populations around the world. I mean, look at what Li Ka-shing's business are doing. They're into telco, they're into property. You know, their actions have got social impacts. Like, if you sell shoebox homes in Hong Kong, that there is a social impact to that. And they got more money than they can consume, right? Mm-hmm. So do you go the route of a kind of succession or legacy planning, which is really for nothing? Or do you go the route of, let's say, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation? That's some kind of legacy. That's a step up in legacy planning, because you're creating something for the future of the world, right? And a few days ago, we talked about how the financial sector was sucking up all the best talent and brightest minds from the Ivy League universities. I mean, this is a clear example of that, right? There's nothing else better to do, so why not join a family business?
Yeah,
but they should. I think for me, if you have a family business, it's good to know the business, you know, rather than not know. And when the head of the family passes on and all that, everyone's going to be scrambling and wondering how.
But good for whom, though?
Good for whom? Well, I guess if you're a shareholder of the, if you have shares in the company, and
but that's what I'm saying. You see, the shareholder does not benefit from the entry of a family member. The shareholder benefits from meritocratic practice of hiring the best person for the job, but who can be or may not be a family member. But the family member has the luxury of actually not doing something as mundane as a family business, but try to do something awesome, like saving the world, right? If you can. I mean, if you're in control of billions of dollars already.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I think it could be, again, too early to tell. But what I find interesting in here is that how they highlighted, well, it's his granddaughter. And whether we're coming one step closer to, this is one case of gender equality. And whether it takes a granddaughter, you know how grandfather with their grandchildren.
Seriously?
I personally think that it shouldn't be mutually exclusive when it comes to, you know, setting up a charity foundation and succession planning. You can have both, I think, to me. But yeah. Well, tell us what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going into the 7 a.m. news bulletin. And after that, we'll come back to discuss the topic that ministers are not supposed to talk about. And that's the ECRL. But we're not ministers, so I guess we can talk about it. So stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.